Blog Talk Radio.
Regal Poet Radio.
Welcome to the Regal Poet Radio Show. We are the conduit for the poet and entrepreneur. This is your host, Imon M. Prosper. Happy Rosh Hashanah to all those in the Jewish community who are celebrating the High Holy Days today and everyone enjoying a day off because of it. We have another great episode for you today. We're talking expanding your art form outside the box once again. You can continue to email me and tell me that I can stop talking about this because you're thinking out the box, but there's someone that is not taking their art form out of the box. Till then, I continue to challenge your thinking on how far a poet or any artist for that matter can go. A few weeks ago, we had the founder of the Institute of Cultural Diplomacy, Mark Donfried, on the program. He was on here with us talking about the strong influence of soft power. So it is only fitting to have an actual cultural diplomat on the program. So a fellow Globetrotter such as myself, I'm definitely appreciative and proud of the path that he has taken. Mr. Kane Smiegel has taken the performing arts definitely outside of the box. Kane wears many hats as a spoken word artist, a lyricist, with his newest album out on Bandcamp entitled Soul Train Robbers. He is also co-founder, artistic director of nonprofit organization Sacrificial Poets. It's a youth-based poetry program where he authored there and his own curriculum called You Think. He recently became a cultural diplomat with the U.S. State Department, hosting an educational project recently out in Peru with school-aged children. That's where I got the whole ignited in the title, you know, the whole You Think and being appointed a dignitary. You know, I always try to be as clever as I am, and you guys love me for it, and I appreciate you for that. All that aside, let's bring on Kane, calling in straight from L.A. How is California treating you these days, Kane?
It's amazing. I can't complain. The weather is always perfect. And, I just try to stay off the freeway during possible.
Yes, I am with you on that. And, yeah, and then the weather is always nice there, especially coming from North Carolina. But I will never step in the water. I'm a Caribbean girl. The water is just too cold in California. But that's good. That's good. So I'm going to dive right into it. Because we have much ground to cover, and the topic is a great one to speak about. I always ask this question to all my guests: do you see yourself as an artist entrepreneur, and what does that word mean to you?
Yeah, it's a great question. I guess so. I never have really used that term specifically. I guess because I have. You know, I think as artists, many of us feel so strongly about the art and the purity of the art that there's some hesitancy to identify as a business person first and foremost. So I usually identify first as an artist and an educator, but I've definitely learned over the years, you know, the importance of knowing the business aspect of it, you know, and knowing how to navigate that world because, yeah, it is important if we want to be able to do our art full time, if we want to be able to not have a little coffee shop job on the side and want to dedicate all of our time to the art that we do and to our goals in that way, then we got to know how to navigate as an independent artist and how to survive and pay ourselves. So, yeah, I think that has kind of become a new hat that I've had to wear over the last couple of years as I've moved, you know, from doing art kind of part-time and as a hobby and moved into doing it full-time as a profession and a career.
Yeah, but I would still say that you still keep your authenticity with your own brand because everything you're doing represents who you are. So as we move into, I just like to talk about this, and I'm passionate about this because of the fact that so many of us don't have that opportunity to consider ourselves that way, and we get trapped in not trying to do what we love, and having to juggle other things where there's so many, and you can attest to this, you have a lot of staff and a lot of people that have allowed you to grow as a business person within the arts. Yeah, so that's why I think it's definitely important. Well, I always ask this, and I wanted to find out about your appointment as cultural diplomat. Explain that to us. How did that come about, and is it a paid position?
Yeah, so it's basically a word that has been used for many years by the U.S. State Department. Dates decades back to when they first started sending folks like Louis Armstrong and Stan Getz and later Maya Angelou overseas, and that was obviously during the post-war period, to work on building relations between Americans and foreign nationals and folks from other countries, but not through the usual route of when we think of diplomacy, but through the arts, building relationships and kind of projecting an image of what it means to be an American that's a little more complex than what we may see on the news and what folks may interact with, whether it's with the military or with politicians or what have you. So I was selected as an artist first to be part of a program run with funding from the U.S. State Department, but run by the University of North Carolina Music Department called Next Level. And they sent hip-hop artists around the world in teams to six countries. And that was the year before last. And they sent six rappers, six DJs, six beat maker producers, and six hip hop dancers. And they made teams of four, so one of each of those, and they sent them to six countries. So there was India, Bangladesh, Bosnia, Serbia, Senegal, and Zimbabwe. And I was selected as an MC to go teach rapping and songwriting with that team of other artists in Zimbabwe as cultural diplomats. And so the idea is to go over and really collaborate with youth and young adults who are hip-hop artists or who have an interest in hip-hop and use the arts as a tool for building relationships across those lines of difference and finding our commonalities through the arts as well and representing the United States not based on policies or on politicians, but based on ourselves and showing kind of the complexity of what it means to be an American and learning the complexities of what it means to be from Zimbabwe. I was asked the next year, they received funding again to fund teams of artists in five countries. And I was hired on as a site manager for the residency in Thailand. So I went for a week this summer to meet with local organizations in Thailand to begin building our partnership there and setting up for the residency that will actually happen in February.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, so it was a beautiful experience, and it is paid in that going as an artist, as a cultural diplomat, we were paid for our time there during our residency for teaching, and the trip was obviously fully covered, and as a site manager, I'm also paid for doing this work. So I feel very fortunate. I also traveled to Peru this summer, and it wasn't as a capacity as a cultural diplomat officially. It was actually with a different organization, but the same type of, kind of goals and building relationships in that way. But it was an organization called Where There Be Dragons that does international youth programs in other countries. And it does definitely tie into artist entrepreneurship as well, though, because I think as artists, entrepreneurs, we constantly have to be increasing and expanding our repertoire. More you can do, the stronger it makes you as an artist, but the more opportunities it brings about as well. So I realized that I was really interested in doing global education with young people and, helping navigate and guide young people through a process of learning how to be humble travelers, travel more than tourists and learn about other cultures and other languages. And so I spent 6 weeks with two other facilitators with a group of 10 high school students from the United States, Mexico, and one from South Africa, in different parts of Peru, and kind of learning about other cultures in that way.
Awesome. That's wonderful. Yeah, and you kind of mentioned something about just being learning about other people. I found that while Tiana and I traveled, there was this hesitancy from me to kind of expose being Haitian because I just assumed people didn't know or cared. And so, but as I, even some of the poems that I had were in Creole. And so as I shared them, I said, you know what, let me just share it. As I shared them, I found that people were more interested. They actually connected to what I was saying, even though they may not have understood the words.
Right.
And
yeah.
So I think it's really important that, and Americans have a bad rap of not understanding other people or just going around as tourists and expecting things for
right.
themselves. And I'm not going to lie and say that I don't find myself guilty, like, where's McDonald's? But, you know, just seeing, but just like diving into culture that way, I found that, oh, you know what, this is really important. And for me, it was reverse, where I felt like I had to come to America and make sure that my heritage is known so it's not diluted amongst, you know, being an American. So that's
right.
just pretty interesting that you mentioned that. And that's kind of pretty much who you are as a person. I noticed that, and I'm skipping around here, that was like a question that I had, that culture is a passion for you. You speak Spanish. You integrate the conversation of African culture in your poetry. You've designed curriculums around it with culture speaking. What is it about culture that drives you to advocacy?
I think that whenever we come to the table and whatever it is, whether it's arts or education or conversation, whenever we enter a space, we bring those different cultures that make up our, you know, identities with us. And our identities, you know, are intersectional and they're complex and they're multifaceted. So we oftentimes bring kind of an amalgamation of many different cultures with us to the table. And I think that finding ways to meet people and connect with people through their culture and meet them where they are, especially I think of it when it comes to education as an educator, right, when I'm working with young folks or with anybody for that matter, but how important it is to connect people with things that have relevance for them or are somehow connected or rooted in something that has been a part of their life from a very young age. And I think that finding ways to tap into culture and to connect with things that are culturally relevant, it's so important. You know, as educators, we talk about culturally relevant pedagogy and curriculum and just that idea that, you know, for example, in the United States where we have in our public school system such Eurocentric curriculum that when we're not reading, we're not learning about, we're not connecting and valuing, you know, people and aspects of other cultures and of a lot of students' root cultures, you know, we're basically devaluing them, without saying it, and that affects people's willingness and people's desire to be connected in that learning space. And so I think it's really important that we meet people where they're at and show value for the myriad cultures that exist.
Mhm, mhm, and that it does seem that is a problem. That is something that I personally have noticed. But what other problems do you believe you're solving with your career? You know, what culture are you wanting to build? What culture are you wanting to build?
Yeah, it's a big question. It's a hard question. It's a question that is constantly constantly trying to answer with my work. I think first and foremost, just using the arts as a way to open up conversations and dialogue and get people to think about things in a different way, whether it's to think about themselves in a different way, whether it's to think about the other, you know, quote unquote, in a different way. Doing a lot what Professor Arthur Romano calls reaching across lines of difference. So a lot of the work that I've been doing with spoken word and education kind of together were affected by, you know, some experiences in Durham and Chapel Hill where I grew up. And lost a friend of ours in 2008, and that same year there was a loss of a student body president of UNC Chapel Hill. Her name was Eve Carson, and one of the two young men that took her life was 17 years old, and he was from Durham, from the same city I'm from, and he went to high school with one of the students on our team, and he was African American, and the young woman who passed away was white, and she was from Chapel Hill, which is more upper middle class white college town, and there's just a huge divide and schism between the two cities that are right next to each other, and you can literally see the effects of the legacies of Jim Crow and segregation. And for us, it was just a wake-up call, you know, of these divides that existed and the conversations that weren't happening. And our idea was to use, you know, spaces, art spaces, open mic, slams, workshops, to bring together folks from all different backgrounds and have them connect with each other authentically and learn about each other, not through stereotypes or through the nightly news, but through the power of their own stories. And so that's kind of been my work, you know, whether it's here or abroad, just trying to use my own story to help create spaces to help people in telling their own story and connecting across those cultural differences, religious differences, gender differences, racial differences, whatever it may be, through the power of storytelling and the art.
Awesome. And you're actually known for your trips to North Africa to galvanize a set of oral presentations from the youth with your poetic portraits of a revolution. And then you came back and developed Sacrificial Poets for pretty much young authors. Now you serve as a diplomat and a touring artist once again. You seem to be continuously expanding. How did you develop your self-concept within your career? Because that's something that people, it shows that you have a lot of confidence in your art, of course, but in yourself that you can achieve these things. How did you develop that self-concept?
That definitely has to be attributed to the community I came up in Durham and Chapel Hill. Just had some incredible mentors, Dasana Hanu, who's a great example. He was my slam coach when I first started slamming in 2006 as a 19-year-old. And you know, he was just an amazing teacher and mentor and someone that I always could turn to and say, you know, check out this piece. Will you give me critical feedback? Or check out this idea I have. You know, what guidance can you offer? And if you don't know, you know, where can you direct me? And he's an amazing role model. You know, he started as an artist in residence at St. Augustine's College and was there and so successful that he was promoted to adjunct professor. And he just started last week a fellowship, the Nazir Jones Fellowship, hip hop fellowship at Harvard University. So he's doing a year writing a dissertation essentially on things related to hip hop and the hip hop archives. So I know Dasan is a great example, but there's so many other folks just in the community that any time I needed support, whether that was financial and doing crowdsourcing and saying, I want to go on this tour, this trip, you know, with North Africa being the great example of that, folks have always rallied and offered to help when we wanted to start a nonprofit. You know, there was a lot of things that we did not know how to do. We knew how to energize young people. We knew how to teach poetry in a way, but we did not know how to create a business that would be able to be sustainable for us and other folks around us. And we reached out to the community, and we had folks help us with grant writing and with the accounting side of things. And so I think really just some of that just comes intrinsically because folks are giving and caring. But I guess one piece of advice I'd have for artists out there, young artists and artist entrepreneurs, is the importance of creating powerful work, sharing that work with the community before you start to consider money. And I think that helps you to build your network and build your relationships, which are invaluable. You know, we did a lot of work and a lot of workshops and performances for multiple years that were unpaid, you know, or paid very little. And I think the community really appreciated and saw the value and the quality of work we were doing. And when it came time for us to ask for their support, we received it.
Right. Yeah. And I definitely have my mixed feelings about that statement because I know you can kind of combine the two. In terms of honing your skills, I would definitely agree. I was reading in your bio that you guys were doing your programming 6 days a week. And I was like, oh my God, I thought it was just me. I thought I was doing too much. But no, it's so necessary because, yeah, there you are, honing your skills. You're exposing yourself to the community, building your fan base, but at the same time, you're building a trust with that you can do this, you know? And because a lot of times it took for me to put my business aside for a year before I jumped back in and said, okay, this is what I wanted to do. And a lot of people don't know that, you know, that's important too, because you may dive some money in a business and that's not really what the people need. So when I read that, I was like, okay, I feel encouraged now. I can keep going. So, and it's funny, Dasan is actually the next person on the show. So it's funny. That, so that was a good promotion piece right there. Tune in the next time because Dasan will be on. Yeah, and that's what we're talking about, the academics of it all. And I'm going to mention this to Dasan, that I noticed that SLAM team, all of you guys are doing something and doing things big and doing things academically, and that's good for the contemporaries of what we represent right now. I think that's excellent. Yeah. But that's the fact that it's not just one person just exploding, you know, and doing great things, that just shows a testament of course, Dasan's mentorship, but you know that you guys are really, really good. A good mix, and you're really supportive and doing things. And I'm going to mention that with Dasan, but I'll mention that now since you went ahead and plugged it there. So that's a testament to you guys. Congratulations. Now, who's in charge of Sacrificial Poets since you – now, did you step down as artistic director, or how is that working out?
Yeah, because when I moved out to Los Angeles, obviously, you know, I couldn't stay on in that way. Trying to still continue to help kind of from a distance where I can. We had a interim ED who just recently stepped down, and it's just in a big state of kind of transition as many, you know, organizations when leadership changes. Right now we actually have three of our youth poets who they're no longer youth poets, but they two of them have graduated from the university, and one has been working for the last few years and starting a family. And the three of them are really interested in kind of taking the reins and teaching workshops and building programs in the Triangle area. So we've been kind of having conversations with them and trying to help them navigate that transition. But I'm just kind of helping from a distance where I can. But it's in their hands now, and that's kind of
right.
The model. That's the idea, is that, you know, the next generation will take it.
Now, this it's still yours, is it not? Or make me understand that, since you co-founded it.
Yeah, I co-founded it and served as the artistic director for 3 years. But, you know, there's no specific ownership because it is a 501c3. So,
okay.
You know, once, in my heart, it's still my baby.
Of course.
And I think it's bigger. It's also bigger than that organization specifically. I mean, Sacrificial Poets is a way of thinking about education and the arts. So I think that I carry that with me every day wherever I go,
right.
The workshops I teach, and that community that helped kind of raise me. So my hope is just that, you know, in whatever form it takes as it continues on, it'll just continue on with the same kind of values and belief in art as a tool for transforming community.
Perfect. And I'll take that as a way to throw in a lesson for everyone that really, it's been years, but Sidney Poitier had said the measure of a man is his children. So you got to look at leadership in that way. If you're not growing, maybe leaving or not leaving, but if you don't have other people that can take over, then you really are not building. So we keep Sacrificial Poets in our prayers, and that it continues to grow. And that. So what made you step away and leave North Carolina to head to LA?
Yeah, I think for me it was. I had learned so much, and we had tremendous success in the 3 years that I worked there, and we're growing, and we, you know, started off with a tiny little open mic with 7 people coming, and when I left, we had 150, 200 people a month, and we're working in 35 schools and programs 6 days a week. Worked with 10,000 youth that year, but it can be overwhelming as well, you know, and to be in a growing position like that, and I know for me, I felt like, you know, as many skills as I had developed, I felt like I still had so much more to learn. Mm-hmm. And and I had been in a leadership position for a while, and I wanted to be able to try some new things and to be around folks in a new community and new places that could teach me a lot mm-hmm. and help me continue to grow and figure out what that next step for me was. And so moving out to L.A. was kind of, you know, standing on my own and getting to travel and tour and say yes to projects that I you know, had to turn down for many years and get to work with other folks, you know, now as a cultural diplomat when I'm traveling, getting to work with other artists and that are at this level and learning from them as well. The program I did in Peru, getting to step out of my comfort zone and mm-hmm. And learn about global education and experiential education. So, yeah, for me it was really just a point of realizing that I had kind of outgrown my shoes and needed to move on and learn some other things and give other people a chance to,
cool.
to come in and see what they could take it.
Awesome. That's a whole conversation in itself, so I'll leave that one alone. But, yeah, no, I was talking to a colleague of mine about that, you know, as a director, do you feel, and being an artist, do you feel sometimes that you're trapped or you need to blossom? Do you feel that your flower is withering? And he was saying, yeah, you know, it does sometimes, you get consumed, but it all depends on what you're trying to do with your career. So yeah. So I guess for you, you needed that growth. You needed that open space, which I can attest to. I could totally attest to, because that's the same way that I am. So now you talked about, really quick, I just wanted to go back to the programs that you were doing in Peru, and they talked a lot about, they were geared around hip-hop. How do you incorporate poetry?
Yeah, so in Zimbabwe, you know, I was obviously with a team of other artists who were hip-hop artists. I was the only one that was, an MC doing rap. Mm-hmm. And so I know for me, you know, a lot of the workshops were around writing verses and around writing songs. But to me, it's like squares and rectangles. You know, they're inextricably linked and similar and under the same umbrella. And so poetry comes in at all times. I mean, I think just in general, rap is poetry. It's a form of poetry. But I also perform some of my poems to open up our final shows. So I open with a spoken word poem and then spit hip-hop verses during the show as well with other students. And we had another student that read a poem. And I inevitably get, whenever I teach hip-hop workshops, I inevitably let the student in my class that's like, I'm not really a rapper, but I write poetry. And I'm like, that's amazing. Let's write some poems, you know?
Right, okay.
And I think that they, for me, what I always tell MCs is that spoken word poetry has really contributed to my skills as a hip-hop artist as well, as a rapper, in terms of the writing. You know, I think there's times when I just want to sit down and put on a beat and just write to the beat and just let the words rhyme and flow and the rhythm kind of take me. And there's other times where I so appreciate being able to write a poem with no barriers and no borders, musical or otherwise. And, you know, and so I think that for me, it strengthened my ability to work with things like figurative language, imagery, and those things, you know, they carried over to my rap and to my songwriting as well. And so I just really try to express that in the workshops as well, is that when we do poetry writing exercises, you know, this is also contributing to our ability to write songs. It's all using words to create imagery and emotions.
Thank you. So, of course, we are all about building communities, and like we said before, we're about duplicating ourselves. How can anyone who's listening become a diplomat?
So there's a few different programs that are funded by the U.S. State Department that are available to be applied to. Next Level is one of them. You can look up Next Level USA online and find out when the next application kind of process will open. I believe it'll be in about the next maybe 6 to 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other programs as well. It's not just this program. So there's one called One Beat that brings together musicians from all over the world and actually brings them to the United States to do a residency and a tour. So they had, like, last time I think they had maybe 20 musicians from 20 different countries, and they came and formed like different groups, almost like bands, while they were in the States, and collaborated on creating music, and then toured all over the U.S., sharing their work and sharing kind of the story of connecting across cultures. And so there's One Beat, there's Next Level, there's American Music Abroad, and you can find out those if you just search online on the U.S. State Department, just look up cultural diplomacy or international cultural music programs, and you just have to apply. You just have to submit your work. There's an application process, and there's a period that they review, and then if you get selected, then you get to travel. One of those programs get go through an orientation process with other artists and become a cultural diplomat, and then you're also eligible for different alumni grants and alumni programs as well. So once you're in, it's just an amazing opportunity to use resources in creating international impact with art.
Nice, and you can get Inknighted.
Ignited.
So awesome. I will put those links on Twitter for you guys to definitely look into. So far, what has been the favorite country for you that you've worked in so far?
Ooh, it's hard. officially working with this program as a cultural diplomat, it's just been Zimbabwe and Thailand so far, and I haven't done the program in Thailand yet, just the planning visit. So as much as I loved it, Zimbabwe was one of my favorite places I've ever been. You know, I've done a lot of international traveling as well. And I loved Peru. The program I was teaching in Peru was amazing as well. But I think there's something about Zimbabwe that just spoke to me. It was incredible, the people there, just the environment, the energy there. It was palpable. And in terms of hip-hop, I mean, oh, my goodness, I was blowing out the water. There was such incredible artists that I kind of felt embarrassed to call myself teacher at times. You know?
Wow, that's
like,
awesome.
So I would say Zimbabwe has a special place in my heart for sure.
That's what's up. Well, I'll definitely put Zimbabwe on my list. Is there one thing that you – one stereotype that you can dispel about? Because when people talk about Africa, I'm like, listen – I did not see an elephant, okay? I saw an elephant in India, but not in Africa. Is there one thing in Zimbabwe that you can dispel for people?
I mean, I think just in general, just the idea of Africa is just this dangerous place, you know?
Right.
And people forget it's a continent, so it has many different countries, and there can be, you know, conflict in one area and not in the other, and there could be conflict that has nothing to do with outsiders. So I know before I went to Zimbabwe, I was at a performance at this college, and I checked into my hotel across the street, and the lady knew, I guess, different performers that come through, they stay at this hotel, so she had read my bio and whatnot and was asking me questions, and she said, oh, I know you're going to Zimbabwe and, you know, in a couple of weeks and blah, blah, blah. And I said, yeah. She said, well, aren't you afraid to go there? And I thought she was talking about Ebola at the time, you know, because it was when that was in the height. And I was like, oh, no, Ebola is happening in West Africa. That'd be like being afraid to go to Florida because it's in Vancouver.
Right.
And she was like, oh, I wasn't talking about Ebola. I was talking about the people.
And then
I got there and was like, wow. Like, you know, not that there's not any history of conflict, but what country doesn't have a history of conflict?
Exactly.
Every country in the world. So people wouldn't say, oh, there were riots in the 1960s, and you know, there were protests, and there was a lot of like racial violence in the United States. I don't want to go there now, you know.
Wow.
And so for me, it was going there and realizing that, wow, you know, even in Harare, the capital city, has, you know, a lower violent crime rate than just about any major city in the U.S.
Wow.
You know, you can walk around without fear of being mugged or anything like that. So for me, it was just dispelling that general irrational fear of the other is the biggest thing I'd like to dispel.
I love doing that too. I love telling people, yeah, I went to Spain and I was having a party in the alley. They're like, what? You don't go in the alley. He's like, well, that's how they do it. Yeah, that's how they do it in Barcelona. I'm sorry. You know, it was weird for me. But, and that's the beauty of diplomacy, being able to do that. So Wow. So awesome. What is your upcoming project and how can we stay connected with you?
Yeah. I have a website. It's just kanesmego.com, K-A-N-E-S-M-E-G-O. So you can stay connected that way. Upcoming project. I mean, I'm just touring the college circuit for the next few months and, doing performances and running workshops around different things. And then I'm hoping to get back to Zimbabwe within the next year. I've been continuing to stay in contact with a few of the artists from the program and collaborating on a piece, a poetry piece, and hopefully a video piece that will be kind of used as a launching pad for an album that they're working on. And then, of course, going to Thailand in February with a team of artists and running a successful program there. So that's kind of my focus right now is just creating some new work. I've been writing a lot lately and reading a lot and just preparing for February and putting prayers out there that I can get back to Zimbabwe in the next
year. Yes. Yeah, we'll put that on there. We'll put it definitely heavily. I'm so sorry to Conscious Campus. I didn't mention them, and I don't have time to really go into them. But check out Conscious Campus, and maybe you can write an article about, you know, why you decided to get an agent, even though you had so much success on your own. That is something I wanted to cover, but we won't be able to do that today.
That's okay.
Thank you so much, Mr. Smego, for being on the show with us.
Thank you.
Truly a pleasure. Keep up that humble and gentle spirit and keep listening to continue creating the great work that you're doing. Much appreciated. Stay regal. And everyone, stay connected to Kane on all the social media as mentioned. We'll be looking out for the play you have coming out soon and for the current project, Soul Train Robbers, on Bandcamp. Check us out. More information on Twitter. And you guys have a really great day. Always remember, to with all you do, be yourself and be regal. Have a great day, guys.
Much love. Thank you.
You're very welcome.